once we start repeating ourselves, we're going to move on. First agenda item is the Research Steering Committee report, tab 8. You ready, Dave?
Yep. Good morning, everybody. As you said, the information is available under tab 8. There's a number of documents. I'll just run through them quickly. We did review five final reports. Those are not available in document form in your binder. We did get a CD for them. We have a draft meeting summary as document number one, which is what we'll principally be working from. Document number two is the committee policy for incorporation of research results into the management process. Number three is an inventory of projects funded by the NCRPP. Number four is a Northeast Consortium summary of completed cooperative research projects. And number five is their project development award RFP for 2006. That's the Northeast Consortium. So what I'll do is run through the reviews we had of these five projects briefly and ask if there are any questions if people want to accept the reviews as we've done them. The first one is entitled Fish Behavior and Species Separation in the Gulf of Maine Multi-Species Trawls. This was done by Fingal He at the University of New Hampshire with Kyle Bouchard as the vessel. The research priority addressed was to develop effective and efficient methods to reduce the impacts of unwanted bycatch. They tested a number of different ideas, mesh panels, black tunnels, rope panels, and various combinations. Two designs showed promise in separating roundfish and flounders at the rear of the trawl. The most advanced designs were actually perfections of the earlier ones. They were ropes that were strung across the gores. They had started with solid panels and ran into a number of problems with them, especially mesh panels, which seemed to clog up quite thoroughly with dogfish. It was be noted that they did have good separation of haddock from flounders. Separation of cod was much more problematic. They did not achieve good separation of cod. They did provide a lot of basic research, and it was a well-done, thoroughly documented report. The committee, as well as the PIs, agreed that key information is found in the summary at the beginning of the report. And I'll read you just a quick quote here, that while separation is possible, both designs have to improve before they can be applied to commercial fisheries. Committee agreed with the PIs that the design work requires further testing and is at this stage that it is likely interim to field testing in an experimental fishery. In a sidebar but important conversations, members agreed that the detailed toe-by-toe information is collected during a research project versus an experimental fishery is critical for management decision-making concerning species separation and other gear work. At the conclusion of this, we recommended that this report be forwarded to the Groundfish Committee and their plan development team. And I'll take any questions on that one. David.
Hey, David, in light of what you just said, it's unclear to me why you would recommend it to go to the Groundfish Committee and the plan development team. Maybe I didn't listen closely enough. What about this particular project? The results were so good that, indeed, the committee should focus on them.
Basically, for them to look at the idea of how the species separated, that they could design something that could, for example, separate haddock out, to remove the haddock, or they could separate flounders out. If you wanted them to separate cod out, they couldn't achieve that. So while the goals of this project weren't directly to separate, originally they had started, I believe, trying to separate out everything from the haddock. They weren't able to achieve that, but they were able to achieve separation of a flatfish from the haddock. So the feeling was that in the future, if there were specific, you know, if for example, we wanted to separate flatfish from roundfish, that they had designs here that could prove useful. But if cod was the thing that we were desiring to separate out, that these designs would not pass that test.
Designs that could be useful, that's where I'm unclear. It sounds like that there's a need for them to do further research, and then when they do that research, the results might then be useful for us. So what sorry to be maybe dense on this, but what do you expect the Ground Office Committee in particular to be able to do with the, with this particular report and its results?
Basically, be able to keep it for some time in the future. For an example, if they want to separate flatfish from roundfish, that they have designs here that would be very effective at removing flatfish.
They have designs that worked, and the success of those designs is evident in the report?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And Pat, did you have a...
Just to clarify also for the council and to add to what David just said, as a matter of course, unless there's some reason to not recommend a project incomplete, further experiments need to be done and so forth, we push everything through so that the committees have those resources at their disposal. They don't have to necessarily do anything with them, but it's background information, and we always put the committee before the PDT because so the committee will know it exists, basically, and then it's for the PDT's use since the PDT's work at the behest of the committees. So it's really, unless there's some glaring issue, misinterpretation of results, technically inadequate work, it usually goes on through. So this isn't any more special than most of the other reports that we take a look at.
Okay, the second report was the effect of cod and mesh types on size selectivity in the Gulf of Maine multi-species trawl fishery. Again, this one was also done by Pingo He along with Kyle Bouchard as the fisherman investigator. And this evaluated the selectivity properties of 8 cod and types using a covered cod and method during the spring and summer of 2003-2004. Cod ends tested were 6-inch, 6.5-inch, and 7-inch, both diamond and square, and 6.5-inch knotless square mesh, and 6.5-inch turned 90 degrees mesh, and a 6.5-inch mesh cod end with chafing gear. So there were a number of different combinations tested here. For the regular 6.5-inch diamond mesh, a series of tows with different tow durations ranging from 15 minutes to 120 minutes was also conducted. One of the chief outputs of this product was to develop this hydrodynamic cod end cover, which was expanded by a series of waterborne kites, and this basically allowed them to show you the whole possibility of what was there. So you had the big mesh cod end inside this outside bag, if you will, so you can see both what was retained by the big cod end, but also what the whole realm of possibilities was for retention. So you know, for example, if it retained fish at an L50 of 23 inches, that it wasn't just that there were only 23-inch fish there, that there may have been fish that ranged from 10 inches to whatever. Because that was retained by the outer cover without interfering with the workings of the big mesh cod end. So this gave us quite a definitive set of L50s for a number of species. There's a large number of bullet points that are provided in the results here. You can read all them. I'm not going to read them all into the record. Conclusions reached from this study was that the mandatory use of 6.5-inch square mesh cod ends would not benefit round fish, but could result in greater mortality in flounders. They considered increasing the mesh size from 6.5-inch to 7-inch as inadvisable because of the low retention rate of legal-sized commercial species in the 7-inch. The committee discussion concluded that the technical review highlighted the appropriate points. The PIs use standard and sound methodologies. The project clearly provides valuable information on cod end selectivity that will prove useful to the council and its committees. They also commented that the PIs produced an understandable, complete, and thorough report. The committee recommended that this report be forwarded to the again to the Groundfish Committee and to its PDT, but also to the Office of Law Enforcement, because one of the things that was highlighted in the report was this issue of mesh size. These cod ends were ordered for scientific research, so you would have hoped that they would have, 6.5 would have been 6.5, 7 would have been 7. In fact, when they were actually measured upon arrival, there was variation in the mesh, as there always is, which is a continuing problem in all our mesh. and that, you know, the mesh sizes varied quite a bit, so we thought it would be valuable for enforcement to take a look at this to just see the, this issue of mesh variability. So I'll take any questions on that one. David?
The third bullet in the results section, it says the 6.5-inch diamond mesh and the 6.5-inch square mesh card ends have similar card end mortality. Did you mean to say mortality?
For the round fish, they retain similar sized fish. I don't know if that's a proper term to say caught in mortality, but it was caught. It's retention.
Okay, so it's
meaning that what was retained obviously was sold, so it died.
It's all about selectivity, obviously.
Right.
And all right, so did So I think you're saying that because of the new hydrodynamic card end cover, we are now in a position to be more definitive regarding the differences, for example, in selectivity between a 6.5-inch diamond and a 6.5-inch square, and the conclusion is that there's no difference in selectivity between those and diamond for round fish,
for
which
round
surprises
fish.
Me.
I know.
So that's a huge surprise. I'm going to have to take a look at that
yep.
particular paper because it has profound implications for me anyways in terms of how I treat square mesh versus diamond mesh. So the results have been reviewed and the committee agrees that indeed their findings are sound, that there was no difference in selectivity.
Right. Based on they provided all their data. You know, we were able to review it. They also provided themselves to be at the meeting so that if we had questions, we could ask them to verify information and stuff. It's very well documented. I think you'll be impressed. Further questions? Okay. The third report we reviewed was the testing the selectivity of gillnets to target haddock in the Gulf of Maine. The objective of this experiment was to select an optimal mesh size to maximize gear selectivity for haddock and reduce the bycatch of groundfish stocks of concern, principally cod. And the goal was to try and set up a special access program in the Western Gulf of Maine closed area. The research priority address was to, again, improve mesh selectivity and escapement information. Results, according to the technical comments provided in the report summary, small sample sizes, at least in part as a result of the experimental fishery permit restrictions. They basically didn't get into the area when they wanted to get there when they thought the haddock would be the most prevalent, may have hampered the success of the project, although useful information is provided. The analysis were considered complete and thorough. The PIs noted that the RSC agreed that the catches of haddock were low and the bycatch of cod was higher than anticipated, so that the selection results were not definitive. And one of the restraints on this experiment was that they had a cod cap, and basically once they reached it, they had to shut the experiment down. It was quite low, and they did encounter cod, and they did reach the cap, so they weren't able to gather as much information as perhaps they had hoped to. The RSC discussion, we agreed that the study was well done and that appropriate designs and methods were employed to evaluate the catches relative to testing selectivity. It was unfortunate that there were only relatively small quantities of haddock and much more cod were caught than had been anticipated. The sample sizes were therefore low and accordingly scientific rigor was not achieved. The information concerning pollock, however, was considered much more robust. They did encounter quite a number of pollock. Funding is available to continue the work and will include modifications to reduce cod catch. They also, as part of this, looked at where the fish entered the net. They concluded that the cod entered towards the lower part of the gill net, and their next idea is to remove that lower part to perhaps allow the cod to just swim right underneath it. Issues of interest identified by the committee during the review of this report, a review of the scientific basis for requiring the current mesh sizes and whether required mesh sizes should be identical for both gillnets and otter trawls. They did show significantly different retention sizes from otter trawls, and the report does illuminate that issue. There is also was a concern that the experimental fishing permit process causes delays, and this is not just germane to this particular project. It's been an ongoing issue to the extent that scientific rigor is compromised. And if you want to read about that in this particular report, see their description of significant problems in the report. Members recommend that the report be forwarded to the Ground Fish and Habitat Committees and their PDTs, and again, also to enforcement to highlight the variation in the fishing gear mesh size. Again, they ordered gill nets of specific sizes for an experimental fishery. When they actually measured the twine when it came, it varied quite a bit sometimes from the size. 7-inch wasn't always 7-inch. 6-inch wasn't always 6-inch. So this makes the L50s a little bit less robust. And this is a problem in not just this experiment and all of them. That, you know, we just don't have standardization of mesh size that comes out of net manufacturers. And, you know, we want to highlight that issue and, again, have the enforcement people take a look at it. Following the meeting, the NOAA Fisheries Regional Office supplied a copy of their policy concerning authorization of special access programs during peak spawning periods, and this policy is attached to the end of this report for your perusal. And take any questions. David?
Okay, you said the objective of this particular research was to hopefully provide enough information to warrant consideration of allowing the 6-inch mesh gill net only special access program in the Gulf of Maine. As it stands right now, my take is, from your committee's conclusions and from what I read, is that we're not in any position at this time to say yes or no regarding the merits of that particular proposal.
That's correct.
Because you've indicated that catches of haddock were low, bycatch of cod was higher than anticipated, and you're recommending, I believe, the committee is recommending that the work be continued with the indication that in order for it to be successful, the scientific rigor has to be there. You indicate that it was compromised in two particular ways. One, that they weren't able to get their experimental fishing permits in time. So clearly that needs to be done the next go-around. That's, I guess, a common problem for much of these initiatives, the experimental fishing permit process. But anyways, so it was compromised in that way, and it was also compromised in one other way, small sample sizes. So if it goes forward, again, to hopefully achieve its objectives, those two problems would have to be overcome. And that's what you're recommending.
Yeah. Okay. The one of the issues here was the fact that you know, this was to design a special access program, and the policy that's attached here at the end shows you that the effort to get into a closed area to design a special access program is very rigorous. That basically, you know, you've got to jump through an extraordinary set of hoops to do this. And because of that, you know, they didn't get in there when they thought there would be the most haddock and the least cod. The only way this special access program might possibly get off the ground is if it could show a very high catch of haddock with virtually no cod catch. And they think there are a couple months that could occur. So that's the basic shortcoming here, is that when they actually did get there, you know, there were a substantial amount of cod in the area. And at least for the part of this experiment during those months, it clearly shows that you would not be able to have a special access program during those months because the cod bycatch would be unacceptably high. Further questions?
Maggie, do you want to ask a question? Dave, is there any way we can speed things up a little bit?
I'm going as fast as I can.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out. John has a presentation
right
to give, too, and we want to provide some time for him.
Thank you. Two quick questions. One is, Dave, could you tell me why they were not able to, why the EFP would not allow them in the area at what they considered the correct time?
You'd have to ask that question of the service. They're the ones who provide the permit.
They were allowed into the closed area, but they weren't allowed in at a certain time.
Right. I believe they wanted to get in there, let's say, in March and April, and they didn't get there till May or something. But
okay.
I don't know.
On your recommendations, you recommend that the report be forwarded to the groundfish and habitat committees, and could you just elaborate on what's the rationale for sending the selectivity study to the habitat committee?
Again, just to see what the interaction with bottom tendon species were. I mean, there's always a question in habitat of what gear impacts habitat, and this did define every single thing that they caught and what their interactions were. Okay. The fourth one was a qualitative assessment of substrate changes due to scallop dredging in the New York Bight and associated recovery rates. In this experiment, the goal of the project was to visually and quantitatively assess the differences between depletion tows to the removal of at least 95% of the scallops from the substrate and a controlled transect substrate to visually and quantitatively document the rate of recovery. So basically what they were looking at is an intensively trawled thing and then to see how fast the habitat recovered from the scallop trawling. The researchers concluded that because the dredge tracks were not discernible after 4 months, sediments had returned to pre-dredge conditions. They concluded that in both experiments and the experimental transect had recovered to its pre-dredge condition. In particular, they noted that the lack of information. The committee looked at this, and again, I'm trying to speed this up, so I'm trying to skip around a little bit. Particularly noted the lack of information on sea scallop catches, and that the results were site-specific with few generalizations possible. As such, the utility of the results to management were very limited, given that quantitative information is not presented to help answer questions about impacts of the scallop fishery on substrates. Committee suggested that there was some communication with the principal investigators on this project to determine if additional information is available. The report will be forwarded to the scallop and habitat committees and their PDTs, end user groups that may request the raw data on which the PI's conclusions were based. So basically what we found was this had was a very limited application experiment, and it couldn't be applied to the scallop fishery in general. And that before any grander conclusions were drawn, that people would have to review the raw data and see what was available. Any questions on this? Okay. And the last one is a population structure and essential fish habitat mapping of Western Georges Bank cod, GIS mapping of eggs, larvae, and juvenile cod. This was done by the Hook Association in cooperation with the Woods Hole Biological Laboratory. And the PIs had proposed to determine if the temporal spawning differences constituted genetically distinct spawning groups, in this case of cod. The hope was to improve stock identification and delineation of regional cod stocks. They did find genetic markers. This was a genetics test. They did find genetic markers that differed and concluded from these differences that these were different groups of fish, perhaps different stocks. All of the adult cod sample corresponded to the council's current EFH designations. Sampled areas also corresponded to EFH designations for 65% of the sampled cod larvae and 8% of the juveniles. Project goals and techniques were adjusted because of weather-related and unforeseen technical problems. We did note that the technical review that was provided was appreciated, but was not adequate, and it generally provided a summary of the paper. In other words, the paper hadn't been reviewed by geneticists, as an example. And the committee does not have any geneticists on it, so we were unable to really provide much further elucidation on this situation. So what we agreed was that it would be helpful for the PIs to be invited to our next meeting, which will focus on cod, and to also invite geneticists who could provide analysis along with other experts to help the committee sort through associated issues of cod stock identification. and we recommended that the committee forward this report to the ground fish and habitat committees. We may provide further comments after these additional meetings take place. So, Dave?
Was there any discussion about whether or not these particular cod, supposed genetically different stocks found on the eastern Georges Bank area, maybe from Browns Bank? Did they look at tagging information, for example? Because it seems like there is a lot of exchange between Browns Bank and that portion of Georges Bank. So you might want to consider that as you move forward with this initiative, since that's a question that, of course, is quite important. What about those cod? Are they moving back and forth across the Great Salt Channel?
Yeah. I mean, we hope to hold a meeting on cod. Our next meeting will probably be devoted almost entirely to cod and to invite a number of cod people, both tagging people, geneticists, try and resolve some of these issues. The committee doesn't have the technical expertise to determine, as an example, I mean, we have to take the PI's statement as fact that the genetic differences identified were, in fact, significant, that they indicated separate stocks of fish. We have no way of judging that. So we do need to get more information. Any other questions? Okay. Our next item, Dr. John Hoey from the Science Center will update the RSC on the NCCRP situation. I'll turn it over to him.
Dave, we used to call it Collaborative Partners Research Initiative, CPRI. Now, what is it? NCRPP, what is that?
You want to...
Northeast Cooperative Research Partners Program. Thank God I've not been involved in any of the decisions about acronyms, so that's the way it works. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad for the opportunity to brief the council and respond and follow up on some of the discussions we had on our July 27th committee meeting. There are a packet of handouts, copies of all the slides. I believe there's extra copies in the back. A lot of the slides... I've got 19 of them, so to try and move through quickly, most of them are provided as background fact sheets for you. We'll blast through them pretty quick, and hopefully this will then give you some of the notes that for follow-up questions and additional calls. Some of the original material is sort of touchstones, some of the goals that were first articulated by Pat Kirkland and Mike Sissonwein in 99 and 2000 as to what were we trying to do overall with the entire program. I like putting that up there so we remember what we were trying to accomplish. When we take these things and move them into and interpret them at the Science Center, we really try to focus on quantitative improvements in our stock assessments, addressing concerns about bias, and then trying to get higher resolution and more detailed data, which will allow us to do more detailed analysis and evaluate a greater number of options when it comes to evaluating management decisions. We're also very interested and committed to trying to increase the direct involvement of our cooperative research staff and scientists at the Science Center in partnerships with the industry to address the issue of reliability and trust in the validity of the scientific advice. At the Science Center, we cooperative research in a holistic sense includes a lot of other programs. We do a lot of review work. We handle the data. So we're a matrix-managed group. I have staff that are associated across almost all of our divisions and branches, and that allows us to very efficiently match teams up and build small groups to address problems. We've also made a pretty heavy investment in our emphasis in the first several years has really been on a field team. We've got well-trained people, and we want to be adaptable so that we can fit in and help and assist where different projects require that. When the program was established in 2000 and 2001, after extensive public hearings and facilitated workshops, the structure of the program was established so that it included the top three items were the larger core investments, industry-based surveys, the electronic study fleet, and the tagging, specifically the Gulf of Maine cod tagging initiative. Over 114,000 cod have been tagged. The other tagging programs that you see up there are tagging projects that were funded either internally or through the consortium, or in some cases have been longstanding programs of the Northeast Science Center. The last two lines are generally the types of topics that we funded through our annual solicitations, the broad agency announcements. And again, this structure and these specific projects were established primarily to address management priorities and management concerns that were identified in 2000 and 2001. Some accomplishments for the team. Again, this is sort of a fact sheet. When I showed up in August of 2003, we had a backlog of data that was from the industry-based surveys. That's been resolved. The 800 scientist sea days, the top bullet, that's just for the cooperative research staff at the Science Center. I haven't been able to do a full accounting of when some of our other population dynamics staff and other people have gone out. We also deployed 350 observer sea days on cooperative research projects, and those were that was a fund and an account that was set up when we had some of the supplemental funds, I believe, in 2000 and 2001, and we covered almost 51 trips there to fit in over the last couple years. We have developed a new MARC recapture database management system, and we'll be working with GMRI to move the COD data into that to address some technical issues that were identified and how that was done. We've done some work, Phil can speak to this, with portable Fiscus. These are the ruggedized laptops and measuring boards and scales that we use to miniaturize it and bring it out on commercial boats for gear engineering. And the remaining bullet points here focus on some of the work we've done on the study fleet. The chairman specifically had asked questions about the relationship between the study fleet initiative and the work we did get involved with for electronic vessel trip reports. Study fleet, when I use that term, is a tow-by-tow, which was the original intent of the program for study for the study fleet portion of the partners program. And the EVTR is reporting on a sub-trip area, just the same statistical strata as your regular VTR reporting. What basically occurred is that in February of 2005, the contract for Perot, which had run for 3 years, was terminated. We moved the software development responsibilities internal to the Science Center. We did not have, at that point, a contract that would allow my staff to work with the person who was the programmer. The ACCSP had provided funds to Cape Cod Hook and to the Fishery Statistics Office, and I saw an opportunity to partner with them. Basically, I used national cooperative research funds, which were not from the Northeast line item, and I contributed, I believe it was $20,000, to purchase computer programming hours. And then we provided technical oversight. I saw it as a way to continue working in debugging our software system and at the same time leverage the fact that that software system originally started as the UNH VTR. So what we essentially did was we knew for the study fleet we had to fix problems in the software. Many of them were code and lookup table derived. And if we fixed the foundation, we could then build two reporting systems on one foundation, and that's essentially what we have. I argued for that. I thought it was a very cost-effective way for us to keep on going, and I think it's been pretty successful. It is, at this point, the only system that's out there that has satisfied the Fishery Statistics Office VTR detailed reporting requirements, so I think it's that was a good decision, and NCRPP, the Northeast funded line item funds, were not used to do that work. The other issue that the chairman wanted to focus on, and this is a lookup list that has a lot of details in it, but essentially we are going through two transitions at the same time. The first is in response to a directive by Bill Hogarth, where he wants to make sure that we consistently align the responsibilities for research programs under the centers throughout the Fisheries Service. So the responsibility for the Northeast Cooperative Partners programs, the contracts that have been issued, and the running of the BAAs will transition to the Science Center. And these are some of the things that we'll be taking over. A fairly significant number of grants and contracts, and we're working very closely with staff of the state federal program and sustainable fisheries in NERO. I think everybody is very well aware that these are critical programs and that we will be working and leveraging the skills that exist in the regional office with our staff. On a personal note, they've given us a lot of briefings and it's been very supportive. When I wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night, I call Paul at first thing in the morning and ask questions about RSAs. So this is administrative, mostly administrative-related tasks that we're talking about here. And if there are questions, I can clarify. The other second part of the transition is that the original program design that was three slides before with the core activities, those are all wrapping up, and they basically have completed their pilot phase. Project reviews are underway or have been completed. I think a large-scale conclusion is that the pilot programs have been very successful, and I think in most cases they have achieved their original goals and objectives and have provided us a great deal of information as to what it takes to support these operations in the field, to manage them, to administer them, to make sure that that data is handled in a timely fashion and can be provided to the councils quickly. We do need to recognize, though, that this is an opportunity for us to reconsider that design, our investments, and what we've been doing in light of the fact that in 2006 you probably have some different management priorities and assessment priorities than you did in 2000 when the original programs were established. And we are very interested in getting the council and committee input and constituent input on these. We do not have an 07 budget, and we're interested in getting as much input as we can so that when we do get our budget, we'll be able to make the right types of investments. These are a fact sheet on some of the things that were accomplished for the Southern New England Yellowtail Survey. This is a very intensive survey, lots of manpower. The database is available. It's on the survey website. It is accessible through the GIS front end, which we redesigned. All of the data was provided for the 2006 assessment or 2005 assessment. I think we have to track down the biosamples, the scale samples from the last leg of that survey and process that. They have submitted a final report, and we have to work out and schedule a review. COD survey, again, a series of pretty much just facts. That, again, is a very intense survey. It was interrupted because of contract problems, and so they do have some funds to continue and fill in some of the seasonal sampling to get a full 3 years. The Yellowtail survey did complete 3 years. We did get a final report from them, and we conducted a peer review with three scientists that were not Northeast scientists. We were very fortunate. We got participation from our Alaska Science Center, our Southwest, and Gislang from Canada DFO, and had, I think, a really productive review meeting there. That report will be provided to the Research Steering Committee, and then we'll forward it on to the full committee. The challenges, I think, that we face for industry-based surveys are where to from here. It's an opportunity for us, I think, to clarify, based on the reviewer comments, what exists out there a little bit as differences of opinions on what was the original intentions and objectives. On the one hand, these were very intense programs designed to give us high-resolution information on distribution and abundance, complement age growth samples, and evaluate time area closures. The alternative is to have a species-specific, fishery-independent time series. The initial reviewer comments indicate that the first sort of approach was very satisfactorily achieved, and yet we have been identified consistent with the review of the Maine, New Hampshire, some technical issues that would require redesign should you wish to continue with industry-based surveys as stock monitoring tools. So I think this is, again, an area where the comments from the steering committee and the full committee, we're really interested in those. And I think the challenge we face is how would we mix industry-based surveys, state surveys, and the new Bigelow when it comes online so that, you know, we've got good, solid fishery-independent data. On to the logbook. This was a very large program run by Perot for 3 years. It was three partner groups, 30 vessels, six different brands of laptops. The most expensive worked the worst, so we saved money by moving along there. Three different software versions were tested. We had a very significant, successful program, and a large part closing the loop on it, I think, reflected the decision to leverage the work on the EVTR. We were able to wrap a lot of stuff up. We've done some internal reviews, and we've got some people that are really enthusiastic about what we've accomplished with that. It is a very capable logbook. In the last 2 weeks, I've deployed six units to test this new version because we made very significant changes in how that software operates. And we have those out on five of the six boats that I have contracts with. And I'm hopefully to get it on the sixth boat very shortly. And we're hoping to have these things resolved and any bugs identified and fixed before we get through about mid-December. So the things that we're working on right now in the top paragraph are the things that we knew we had to do, and they're underway and being tested now in the field. The second bullet that exists there are things that we have to do land-based to receive that data and to allow it to be summarized and to start addressing the issues of can electronic reporting be a substitute for paper VTR. And those are things we're working through jointly with the study fleet type projects at the same time that that's being handled on EVTR. The chairman asked me to try and put out some questions to stimulate discussion. So I think the issues that I'd like to you to focus on are we're sort of in a stage of competing demands. There are some people that are saying this was a very significant investment, a lot of money was spent. Can you prove that you've got something and what it can be used for? That could be satisfied perhaps with a limited deployment on a very focused fleet. The other alternative is basically to say let's sit down and look at how we want some long-term deployments and what are the management and strategic questions, either from the stock assessment people or from the managers, where this toe-by-toe information is critical. From the Research Steering Committee, I got an earful, and I deserved it. We do have to sit down with all the participants. We did not do a lot of outreach and communication during the transition when we took over the program. Part of that was because I didn't have any travel funds, and we just focused very much on working with the programmer and dealing with this stuff. So we have a lot of issues, and the industry had some really great questions when we had our meeting. Need to clarify what our goals are, how we want this product used, what it can do and what it can't. There are some issues about relative to the data and how we've used the data and could we get more out of it that we will address. There are reporting compliance and enforcement issues that they're concerned about with discard reporting. And we've got some questions about peer review and would this be the subject to the same type of peer review as our other projects. So I think when we start talking about options, I'd like to suggest that we ask three critical questions and make sure we refer back to those when we're considering what we may want to consider in the future. Do you need toe-by-toe performance data? Is that critical for either the management question that you've got? Because if that's what you want, this product will work. Is it the best tool? In some cases, toe-by-toe data cannot simply be self-reported because there are concerns about precision and accuracy and observers. But a matching of electronic logbooks and observers can give you some increases in sample size. And I'm an implementation person, so I'd really like to know how many vessels you want this on, because we've learned an awful lot about what it costs to support these in the field, and the scale of the project that you've got can be influenced by the budget significantly. The original questions, this is the last slide, the original question and design of this was to deploy on a statistically based subsample of the groundfish fleet. When that was done in 2000 or 2001, it was about 260 vessels. That's a very significant fleet. First thing I have to do is run out and do purchase orders for 250 more computers, if that's your objective. That will take time to train people. You have to have field staff to work directly with the fishermen closely. But that is still as viable an option for deployment. If you have specific questions that require that information. Targeted fleets are small ones where we think a small number of units might be deployed, and we could, in a shorter term, address stock assessment precision questions. Some examples have come to mind where the stock assessment is based on a small number of trip-based CPUE observations. You have limited observer data, a small fleet, and you're using a stock production model to say what the status of the stocks are. The population dynamic staff have sort of thrown out work with red crab, tilefish, I think some potential for hagfish, and there may be one or two others that they've suggested where a small number of units could very rapidly increase the information that would be available. If you want to monitor fishery performance at a fine scale, how effective are separator trawls working in a place, this gives you a very large number of toe-by-toe observations. And again, the final one is just to realize that we can do rotating types of deployments on identified fleets. We could do work, let's say, on scallop fleets, to look at depletion rates when they enter a closed area. This gives you toe-by-toe detailed data that would be useful for that. At the same time, you could run that periodically if you wanted to put a heavy deployment out in southern New England to look at the yellowtail recruitment or something. You could do that and then do it for 2 or 3 years and get a product out of it. If you want to get into monitoring or whatever, it would take us 2 years about to roll out 250 units, get people trained and using that. And if you wanted to use it for assessments, you need to commit for maybe a 5 to 7 year time period of running it, so you'd have a good time series. So that's the end. I think I did it in a reasonable period of time. And it's a lot of information, and I can respond, but you've got copies. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for coming, John. Any questions or comments? Paul.
Thanks, John. A couple quick questions. I would hope that you'd work with David and Pat, and our role as research steering, I hope has been beneficial and does just that, steers the research that NIMS had the money and now you have the money and manage the program. So I hope our role is still important to steer the research that meets management needs, provide some review and management advice, and if you see where we can improve, let us know. Secondly, I noticed in a slide that you mentioned doing some work with SCUP and sharks, and our original focus all along has been towards groundfish. And, I think some of the money was specifically targeted because of the cuts in the groundfish fleet and to give opportunity for fishermen to do other things when days are being reduced. Is that focus going to change, and how do you see that?
To respond to that, when I arrived, I was given four major piles of data and said, get this stuff so it's quickly accessible. Industry-based surveys had the highest priority at that point because it had the largest number of boxes of paper sitting in my office. We resolved that. Study fleet was a mess, and we had several tagging programs where everybody was collecting data in slightly different versions. So what we used our cooperative research funds for was to examine the design of the data management system that GMRI had built for COD. We ran a peer review outside workshop on that up in Kennebunkport and got some really good comments from people on a redesign. At the same time, the yellowtail flounder and some of the haddock tagging work needed to go into the same type of database. SCUP was collected on exactly the same forms. We did not use any of these funds to actually go out and tag SCUP, but if I'm designing a system and I have to design a system with programmers to manage COD and yellowtail, it really is a little incremental additional cost to handle the other ones. The other benefit that comes from it is you have to anticipate different things occurring when you stick tags in fish and what happens to them. And we actually found it very beneficial to look at the Shark project, which has 40 years of data. And in fact, any possible way that you can tag a fish and have it come back and get re-tagged and stick three tags in it and come back, those are things that were identified in our workshop on groundfish that we had to be very careful that our database could handle that. So I don't see there's going to be any change from our focus. And quite often I have split funding sources. We do get funds out of the national office. So generally when we work on the Mid-Atlantic stocks, I use national cooperative research funds for those, and the line item that's Northeast Cooperative Research Partners Program funds are focused very heavily on the groundfish and New England fisheries.
Dr. Pierce.
I want to thank you, John, and also Earl, for the work that you've done on this, and in particular, because of my involvement with the industry-based survey, I'm especially appreciative of the efforts that you put into peer review. It was a well-done exercise to review the IBS work for COD. Unfortunately, the yellowtail work couldn't be done because Rhode Island didn't show up. But we were there, and the COD IBS was reviewed, and I was very satisfied with that review. And by the way, for the benefit of council members, Tom Neese has the report that was reviewed by the peer reviewers, a report put together by Bill Hoffman and other members of my staff. If you don't have a copy, David, I can give you this one, okay? It's a well-done job, frankly, a little bit biased, of course, because I participated in the writing of the report and, of course, the development of the whole program, working closely with the center and with the regional office. So the report is available, and by the way, some of the data collected through this initiative has already been used by the plan development team regarding the appropriateness of boundaries for some of the rural enclosures. So we're still very high on this project, and we look forward to the results of the peer review, and John indicated that those will be forthcoming fairly soon, and Earl also indicated that was the case. I also wanted to make the council aware of the fact that I do indeed agree with the points made by John on page 7 of his handout, his PowerPoint presentation, the IBS challenges for 06 and 07. I won't review those, just to say that those are good challenges that I suspect we'll tackle very soon. And let's see, I had one other point that escapes me at this moment. Anyways, job well done, and appreciate the efforts of John and Earl, and we look forward, of course, to the change from the regional office to the Northeast Fishery Science Center, and we, of course, will do everything possible within our shop to assist the center with this transition.
Anybody else? Rodney.
Yeah, thank you, John. I think it's a worthwhile program. You're doing an excellent job. I just have a question. You said you have 6 laptops out. I was wondering, do you have any of those on small day boats, one or two-man boats, and how the difference is collecting data? Because it's very easy for a larger dragger with 5 guys for the captain to stay in there punching information in. But when you got one or two-man dragger, how's the information coming back? Is it identical?
We do have it on Dave's boat, which is a one-handed operation right now. And we've made some improvements in the software so it's easier to get through. We specifically chose those boats based on some performance criteria from the previous data that we had looked at, and we sort of gave everybody a grade from their percentage of bad records that were thrown in. And we started with the people who had the highest grades and just called them up and worked down the list, because we needed people who were really familiar and had worked the first version to really kick the tires on the second version. So we do have it on Dave's boat, and we will look for a few other small boats, but we are attentive to that. This was one of the big things that we found with working on the original project with Cape Cod Hook. It's a combination of both the size of the vessel and the crew and your operation style. And what we found that it was a great difficulty technically for the laptop and then the fishermen to handle was on some of the smaller boats fishing gillnet and bottom longline, the idea and design that we've got is if you deploy a string of gear, we're trying to associate the times when you set that gear, the specific depths and temperatures, with the catch on that piece of gear. If your operation is such that you set 6 to 8 separate strings rapidly in succession, that's a whole bunch of button pushing that a two-man crew can't handle. And yet, if we go and say, okay, if I'm setting 6 of these panels or 6 of these bottom long lines in close proximity, but I want to consider that just one fishing operation, then we lose the ability to distinguish between if the shallow group of that gear had a species composition that was different than the deeper ones. So then it becomes a question of, are we asking the fishermen on those styles of fisheries to do way more than we'll ever need, both in an assessment sense or in an analytical sense. So that's exactly why we thought that the EVTR was a better one. There's day trip boats, and it satisfies the demands that you want to get this information as quick as possible without the excessive burden that just makes it logistically unfeasible.
Thank you.
Phil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A nice presentation, John. Let me start off with the fact that I'm somewhat pleased to see this system get what I would call an overhaul, whether the changes and stuff that have come about in it over the last year and stuff, and get a little handle on it. Because since I started in this, the part that bugged me was the inaccountability over the course of time of this whole program. I mean, it's got good intentions, and it does a lot of good work. But the bad that comes along with it, or the inaccountability that came along with it, was really frustrating to me. And then the timeline series of trying to get something done and get it to us to do anything with just becomes mind-numbing. If you go through this document here of, you know, the projects and stuff that you have there, and it's 3 and 4 and 5 years later to get something, to even be able to use it. I mean, if you go through that list right now, how many of them things on that list are available to us as managers to use? So I'm really glad to see that it's getting overhauled and taking up a step. And I hope that will continue, because my own analogy would be if this whole system went under an analysis, you'd make FEMA look good over the last few years. This year here has been, you know, the last couple of years it's turned 180 degrees. It seems like to me, but the first few years, I mean, the study fleet thing is a tremendous thing. I think it's got great potential. But the runaway that took off on the beginning of that is astounding to me. I mean, we're at, what, 2.8? Somewhere's around on that. And at the study fleet meeting, the Science Center doesn't use any of this data. None of the data that was put into the database or whatever is really available for stock people, because it doesn't have this, doesn't have that, hasn't meet the criteria. And I understand it takes a little time to go their way to produce the exact numbers that they want. But the other portions of it, warrant getting looked at just astounded me, absolutely astounded me. The biggest point that I made at that meeting, I made it at Research Steering, and I'm going to make it now, is we send in a VTR. It goes to the Science Center. You look at that VTR, we caught all the fish in the same place. Unless we change boxes, the VTR says we caught them in 522, whatever the hell it is. If you look at the study fleet, well, we had to go here to catch the yellowtail. You had to go here to catch this. You had to go here to catch that. You moved around. That data never gets looked at. Doesn't get touched. Now, I do believe they're going that direction. We've made the point, and I understand they will be. So I'm really, really glad to see that. The other point I got to make is, I've asked, is this study fleet, I mean, has the decision been made? We asked, talked about it before, of doing a review for this study fleet, or should I make a motion that we do?
Let's talk about the peer review first, and then I'll respond to the data issue. We attempted to run a quasi review. This is fundamentally a research and development hardware software project. That's different than an industry-based survey where I can go out and I can go to any one of my science centers. We did contact and brought in one of the designers of the national FISCUS system from headquarters to attend the study fleet meeting. We had invited a NERO staff person who was involved heavily in the VMS systems. He was called to duty, so we lost a reviewer there. Outside of that, everything that we've done, we've really worked with the data management groups in both NERO and at the Science Center to make sure that the statistical methods we're using and the quality and coding of the data and all that stuff are up to national standards consistent with ACCSP and all of those parts of it. So it's, I'm certainly willing to make another effort at getting an actual peer review. I will say we tried. We would have liked to have, some more people take a look at it. I did a presentation at a national meeting in headquarters and have already been contacted by Pacific States and the Southwest who want, and they've been given copies of the code and demo modules of this. And, so there is some interest in people looking at it. So the kind of review we'd have to do would be different. You'd bring in a different suite of people, and we can handle that. On the data issue, I think, Phil, we do take that to heart. I think for everybody just to understand, there's one person who's doing this full time. And we have treated this as a research and development, and our analysis of the data to date has largely been focused on how it compares to observer data and VTRs and what the patterns in the data tell us about how the software works and how the fishermen are using it. So we can make sure that you can learn from looking at the data where likely errors and mistakes ran in, and quite often that was attributed to how the software ran. So we looked at the data that we had largely in the context of helping us debug a system. Having said that, there were six different versions of the primary software that collected the data used over 3 years where screens changed, so there's data quality issues. The use of this information for a stock assessment is a bit problematic because we don't have a statistical design. We had 30 boats, but it really wasn't a random selection. So it's hard to decide how you'd use that in a stock assessment. To your point, we did do some analyses and looked at patterns in that data, sort of mining the biological information. And, in fact, we think that we're going to try and do more of that as time permits. And Phil's exactly right. We found that there was a pattern in estimates of discards, so that discards increased with time of day, and that the lowest discards occurred in dawn, near dawn and in the evening. That's a piece of biological information that you could never get out of a VTR because you don't have adequate and accurate enough effort by time of day information coming from other systems. So I think it's a very good point, but it was probably a result of the fact that we didn't do enough outreach and sit down with the fishermen and talk to them about it. So we intend to look at more of that, and you know, I think it's kind of that's a real positive part of it, because I think you're right. I think there is a lot of information on capture. Dave's talked to us a number of times about information on dogfish bycatch and bottom temperatures and things like that. So we're aware of those concerns, and we'll attempt to satisfy what the Research Steering Committee would like us to do.
Pete?
John, you mentioned observer data. I'm interested in how this program is going to be or is integrated with the observer program, or how it might eventually be integrated in any way.
On a couple levels, we have used it as a comparable database and a measure for accuracy and precision, and we also then compared it to VTRs. We've got a draft report on that we're hoping to get out as a technical manuscript in our free time. And basically, the fact sheet talks about the fact that we get much greater number of observations with better accuracy in terms of effort, duration, and time, and that stuff lines up very well with observer data. We get more species reported more frequently for discards than we do on VTRs. It's not as complete a list as observers may get, but it's 70 or 80% in that direction, as opposed to being not in that direction for discard reportings on VTR. So we are lining it up. We have done some presentations for members of the observer teams, because we think that this stuff will start showing up on boats that they're on and if they know a little bit about it. But we haven't really made any plans for any kind of broad-scale training or integration. What it does is it gives you a self-reported data set that's on the same basis, toe by toe, that you can get out of observer records. And so some of the databases that we'd like to design for study fleet, we may just steal the models that are used in observers. You know, it's not formally linked, but we are aware of what they're doing, and we're keeping things moving in the same line in terms of data management.
Okay, we have time for one more on the council, and then if anyone else has questions, John, will you be here for a little while?
Yep.
Okay. Anyone else on the council? Okay. Thanks, John. Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. What I wanted to show by this presentation that John has just put on for you is to provide the council both with the what's happening administratively within NOAA and the changes that are going on here, but also to provide you with a list of the tools that are now available to the council with these pilot projects having been completed. So it would be up to the council at this point to perhaps direct its technical teams to request the use of these tools if they feel it's appropriate. And I'd leave that up to the chair as to how how you would like to handle that. But the Research Steering Committee's suggestion was that, you know, you allow the technical teams, plan development teams, or whoever to perhaps request the use of these tools if they need them to get dedicated information.
What are the tools?
The industry,
reports that you've...
The industry-based surveys is example. The study fleet, if you wanted to do a directed study of a particular fishery, you wanted specific information on a specific fishery for a specific reason, those tools are now available to perhaps provide that information, and John's people could design that and implement it for you.
Okay. I don't think there'd be a problem if a particular technical committee or a PDT wanted to go in that direction. I think they're free to do that.
Okay. Pat?
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, John, the study fleet initiative probably shouldn't languish while we're, you know, waiting for different teams to request use of the tool. And I think, as it came up at research steering, is that the study fleet is there now. It's up and running. The capability is there. We presume, since this was a council-supported initiative, that you want to continue. But there is a question about where do you need toe-by-toe information and which fishery do you want to focus on? It was initiated in the context of the groundfish fishery. Do you want to continue with that because it's very clearly a fishery with very pressing needs? Or do you want to focus on other fisheries? So while I think maybe you want to have technical staff input or PDT input, we are going under the assumption that you want to go forward, but I don't think you want to, you know, just assume that it's not going to happen unless a technical team or PDT has input. So I think it's up to the council to say, sure, we want to continue with groundfish, or do you want to focus these activities on another issue, or are you no longer supportive of them? Perhaps I'm putting the cart before the horse. I don't mean to do that.
Well, I think an appropriate place to have that discussion, unless council members want to talk about it right now, would be at the executive committee. It would give us a chance to talk to staff and see if they can identify opportunities and different management plans where we can utilize this. So put that on the agenda. John?
As time permits, if the council staff, we're willing to come up. I've got a projector, and I've got a laptop with the logbook software on there. I'd like to come up to the council headquarters and sit down with the staff, and we can run through. We can show you what the software does. We can you know, let you take a look at it, and we have some presentations on the data that we've collected and some of the things that we've learned on that. We're also going to try and schedule meetings with some of the regional groups and see if we can give them briefings on how that software works and what its capabilities are. One of the options that my staff has suggested is that next year when we go into the BAA, if there are specific segments of the industry or fleet groups who would want to put a proposal in, then we could evaluate those, and that might be a good mechanism in the short term for fleets to come up to speed and see if there are particular questions that they have, or management teams have, that could be addressed using that tool.
Anything else, Dave?
No, that concludes my report.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you pointed out in behind tab 8, document number 4 is just a summary. Did you point that out? It's a summary of completed cooperative research projects through the consortium.
Yes, I pointed that out right at the beginning. I went through the list and told everybody what documents were available for their perusal.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to go right into the open period for public comment.